I have these photos. I have an iPhone. So I have these photos that come up like memories every day, and there'll be a series of them. So who popped up? Murshid Kabir Kits, Murshid Hidayat, Murshid Kareem Bash Vidivan, all these, and then a picture of Murshid, and all these pictures popped up, and I thought, what a blessing. But as we were saying the invocation, I remember what Murshid Kabir Kits always told us, to remember ourselves as part of, that we are also an embodiment, and it is within us to include ourselves as all the illuminated souls, because we are, whether we realize it or not. So I just want to honor all those beings that have gone before us, that have given us so much, each one of them. And today I wanted to focus on Murshid and self-sacrifice as an example for ourselves, not in a way that we have to throw ourselves on the fire, but in a way that when things are happening to us, we can look at it as I like to think of it as the Christian saints and martyrs did, sort of unifying with Christ in his crucifixion. And we all have those little crucifixions every day. Every day something happens. And if we can try to unify with the risen Christ, the crucified Christ and the risen Christ, it can be very helpful. And Murshid has some things to share with us, because he certainly made a lot of sacrifices in his life in order to bring this message to the West. He, of course, left the comfort of his family's home, and he left for a place that he didn't know anything about, America, and traveled throughout the US and then Europe. And those things, all of us that have traveled much, we know that it's, while it can be very wonderful, it also can be a big inconvenience, different foods, different time schedules, different climates. And so he went through a lot to sail the shores of safety in India to come to us and bring this message to us, which we're so grateful was recorded to be shared with us all these generations later. As we know, March 5th marked his 96th Urs, meaning the day of his passing. And we honor that, because that in a way is when we lose the garment of this body, and the spirit can fly free back to its origin, which is the heart and arms of God. So I titled this talk, Murshid and Self-Sacrifice. And again, just remembering everything that Murshid gave up for us, and how selfless he was in doing so. In his own words, Murshid says, from his own autobiography, "I gave up my music because I had received from it all that I had to receive. To serve God, one must sacrifice what is dearest to one. And so I sacrificed my music. I had composed songs, I sang and played the veena, and practicing this music, I arrived at a state where I touched the music of the spheres. Then every soul became for me a musical note, and all of life became music. Inspired by it, I spoke to the people, and those who were attracted by my words listened to them. Instead of listening to my songs, now if I do anything," and I would say all these years later, it's still true, "now if I do anything," Murshid says, "it is to tune souls instead of instruments, to harmonize people instead of notes. If there's anything in my philosophy, it is the law of harmony, that one must put oneself in harmony with oneself and with others. I found in every word a certain musical value, a melody in every thought, harmony in every feeling. And I have tried to interpret the same thing with clear and simple words to those who used to listen to my music. I played the veena until my heart turned into this very instrument. Then I offered this instrument to the divine musician, the only musician existing. Since then, I've become God's flute. And when God chooses, I'm used to play God's divine music. People give me credit for this music, which in reality is not due to me, but to the musician, he uses the capital M, who plays his, her, its own instrument. Now, if you reflect on your own life, you'll know that you yourself, when trying to attain something or working towards some mastery, had to give up something. And Murshid goes into this a bit further when he says, now he's teaching. This is no longer his autobiography, but from his teachings, he teaches us this. When we think deeply about the problem of life, there is no path in the world, whether spiritual or material, which we can tread successfully without a sacrifice. And he just spoke of that. Sometimes the sacrifice is great, and sometimes small. Sometimes the sacrifice is made first, before achieving success, and sometimes afterwards. What does he mean by this? We might ask ourselves. Well, indeed, some sacrifices are small. They may just something we take in stride. Some of them may be large. Sometimes we make that sacrifice before. For example, those of you that have taken up your studies, we maybe had friends that decided, oh, I don't really need to go to school. I can earn money now, and that's what I want right now. But in the end, maybe they made their sacrifice later. Maybe they earned their money while we were struggling a bit to try to get ourselves an education. And maybe we had to sacrifice some things on the way. I'll speak about my own experience where there was no money in the family for me to go to school. So I understood that, and I was grateful for what I had and what I had been given. And I applied myself. I managed to get scholarships and cobble together my tuition, but I still had to pay my way, and I had to pay for books and art supplies. And I remember in graduate school, I had, as I was graduating with my bachelor's degree in design and visual communications, I'd been offered a really good job at Hallmark as an art director, and a really good job because while working at Hallmark, I had worked with the Muppet people, Henson and Associates, in New York, and I was doing photo shoots with them and styling the photo shoots. And they liked my work very much, and they'd offered me a job. Well, my mother was very perplexed. Why would you go on to graduate school? And she was really almost not speaking to me because she felt I was giving up a good offers. Nonetheless, I knew myself well enough. I mean, even the people, the Muppet people said, we'll get you into Columbia University. You can study there and work with us. I knew it wasn't for me. I knew I needed to understand more the theory of my own field. And so I chose to remain a poor student. I thought, once I get fascinated with having a decent income and being able to spend money and do whatever, which I wasn't accustomed to doing, that I might not really apply myself or go back to school. But in the end, I did it. And I have to say, I was so poor. I took the money that I had and I would divide it into four envelopes and put it in my freezer. And I would take one envelope out a week. That was what I could spend and use for living and for my supplies, et cetera. But you know what? That sacrifice was so worth it to become an educator and to teach all those years. And I didn't only help myself to a good living, which I would have done with the other jobs, but I helped so many students learn and grow and have a career. And I just can't imagine what would have been better than that. So the sacrifice was really worth it in the end. And, you know, although working as an educator, I never earned huge sums of money as a professor, but I did enough. And now I have enough in my retirement to survive and live the life that I want to. But the point is that was a sacrifice. And it even almost initially, and you know how much I care about my mother and how much she cared about me, but oh, she was not speaking to me for a while. She thought I was making the wrong decision, but I had to remain firm. Another quick story, my dear friend, Sri Karuna Maima, bless her soul. She was also a great musician of India. In India, they class their musicians A, B, and C. And the A musicians perform on All Air India. And she was many times featured on All Air India. And she herself was an educator. She was, in fact, the vice chancellor, vice president, whatever you want to call it, at the University of Agra. And she had studied both literature and music. So she was in a high position for a woman then, especially in India, in an education. But she had a calling. And she was very touched by the teachings of Sri Aurobindo. And when she was a younger woman, although she had all this success in her music and in her educational career, she decided she would give it up and she would go live at the ashram. But in her mind, she thought, she told me this with her own mouth, maybe I can go to the ashram and just meditate all the time and play my music. Well, what did they do? They made her an administrator because they knew she had administrative capabilities. And she said to me, in order to come here and live and be amongst the vibration of the teachings of Sri Aurobindo, I had to give up my music. Now, Karuna Mai is a great lover of Murshid. She had his books in her room, and she was always invited to sing at his urs in India, New Delhi. So she had that connection. She understood what that was to give up her music. As she got older and she finally retired, then she was invited to give musical meditations in the evening in the temple there. But not until then. They always expected her to offer her other skills. So sometimes we have to sacrifice something for the quality of our teachings and give up something ourselves to give to others. So think about that. I know all of you done that in some way. Those of you that are parents, you certainly understand what I'm talking about. You would rather your children eat than you yourself. So you know, you understand very well what I'm talking about and what Murshid's talking about. Murshid goes on to say, as sacrifice is necessary in life, it is made by everyone in some form or another. But when it is made willingly, it turns into a virtue. When it is made willingly, it turns into a virtue. The greater the ideal, the greater the sacrifice demands. The greater the ideal, the greater the sacrifice demands. A friend of mine down here wrote me yesterday, and she said, I'm going to get a passport photo. I'm very excited. I'm going to go to Portugal, where there was the sighting of Our Lady of Fatima. And I'm also going to Our Lady of Lourdes. And she's well into her 80s. She's traveling with some of her children, and she's just thrilled about this journey. I also know she's had some health challenges, so these journeys are going to mean a lot to her. But as she's older, it's also going to be a challenge. She's going to make that sacrifice to make that journey. But then I started thinking about, I've read the stories of the children of Fatima that saw that vision of Our Lady of Fatima. There were three children that saw that vision. Two of those children, early on in their lives, suffered very poor health and eventually died. The oldest sister, lived. She may, in fact, still be living. She was at the time of the reading, what I was reading about the story. And of course, we know that Then who else had to make that sacrifice? The family. Because what happened once the vision was seen, their farmland was overrun with pilgrims that wanted to come. So the animals had to go, the crops had to go. So though that family and those children made a great sacrifice, having received that vision, which is a great blessing, of course, they all achieved sainthood, but there was a cost. And the same thing at Lourdes. If you know anything about that vision, Bernadette, when she was a child, had a vision of Our Lady of Lourdes. And the vision told her, she always called it Our Lady, the beautiful lady. She said the vision told her to start digging in the earth and eating it. Well, everyone thought she was absolutely mad, and they thought they called her a pig. And she kept digging and digging and digging and digging. And a little water came up. And she was told to take that and bless herself. But, you know, again, people thought she was acting like a pig. They even put her in jail. I don't know if you know that. She was questioned by the legal authorities and the church authorities about her vision. They accused her of being a liar. They told her that if she didn't tell the truth, her father would lose his work. Terrible challenges she went through. But her story in every accounting was so absolutely accurate that they could not but help believe her. And then in the end, people wanted to make her a celebrity. They all started coming to her house, wanting her to touch them. She started hiding from people. She ended up going to a convent and hiding away. So these great saints that have brought great visions, and I don't know if you know what Lourdes looks like now. It's a huge lagoon. It's beautiful, and people go there just to get a little touch of the water. People have been taken out of comas. The paralyzed people start to walk. It's amazing, and perhaps our faith heals us. So remember that. Keep your faith in the middle of sacrifice, because our faith heals us. So again, Murshid says, the greater the ideal, the greater the sacrifice it demands. Sacrifice of a possession is the first step. Kind of easy. I can give that away. The next step, the next one is self-sacrifice, which was the inner note of the religion of Jesus Christ, what he went through. And Murshid goes on to say, charity, giving something. My own mama would always say, giving something that you don't really need or not, or giving like excess away isn't really charity. She always said, you got to give a little bit till it hurts. Think about that. So when I was that poor student in graduate school with my four little envelopes of money per week, I would take some of that money and I would go. I was raised a Catholic and I still consider myself Catholic, a Buddhist, a Sufi, all of it, as Sufi is all of it. But I would go to church every Sunday or Saturday evening for a vigil mass. And I would give some of that money away thinking, oh, I really need that money. But I'd give it anyway, remembering my mother's words. And lo and behold, I'll tell you, little miracles would happen. I put my hand in a pocket and there was a $20 bill, which might as well have been a $50 bill to me then, or a $100 bill to me then. And things just happen. You know, someone was generous, or I don't know, I found something on sale for food. I mean, they were like little miracles all around. So Murshid says, charity and generosity, those could be different sides of the same coin. He says, even tolerance and forbearance are a kind of sacrifice. And every sacrifice in life, in whatever form, means a step forward towards the goal of every soul. And this excerpt is from The Unity of Religious Ideals. I think the first excerpt, I'll just tell you, it will be noted in the study guide, is from The Mysticism of Sound, by the way. Okay. Now, I want to talk about sacrifice. And for me, and maybe others can illuminate me, maybe you don't feel the same way. And that's okay, because we shouldn't all agree. We don't all need to play the same note. But I find that there's a connection between sacrifice and surrender. How do we surrender? It's not easy. I'm speaking for myself. I can't speak for anyone else. But it's sometimes not easy. And then I realize I'm like a fish on a hook and I'm fighting against life. But sometimes if I just relax, it flows. Maybe you all have had that experience as well. So there's a practice that the Sufis do, and it's an old practice. It's based on a hadith of the Prophet Muhammad. And I will say, in a few weeks, I've been asked by Pir Muinuddin Clark to give a Sunday morning teaching at his Dervish Cafe, Dervish Coffee. And I'm going to kind of continue. If you can show up then, it would be good, or at least look ahead at the study guide, because I'm going to elaborate on this teaching then. But I'm going to give you the practice that's based on this hadith. And it's said that the Sufis, you know, we've heard this said, and of course this is a goal for us, is to see the whole universe is teeming with every form of life. So everything is alive. And to remove our ego attachments, which are that veil between self and other. And this allows us to experience a kind of universal life, the interconnectedness of all things, as the Buddhists would say, beyond the limitations of this life even. And there's a practice that is based on this hadith, and this is the English translation. And let's see, I'm gonna see if I can copy this. I'm doing my best here. And I'm gonna see if I can get to the chat window, if you can find it for yourself. You may have to go up to window and open the chats. I'm going to paste this in there for you all to see. So you can, oh, that's not it. Let's try one more time. That was the Zoom link. We don't need that. Hold on. Let's see if this works. There we go. There we go. Here it comes. And let's see, there you go. And let me see if I can guide you. If you go up to window, is that right? View, no, it's probably view chat. Under view, you can see view chat. It's maybe not necessary, but you will be able to see it. And I'll repeat this several times. It can be done with movements. I myself have been given the directions, which I don't do now because my knees are a little bit challenged, but you can do it kneeling down and bowing down, touching the head to the earth. Did you all see that? Yeah, okay. You can put let me read it first. Ya Allah, in love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee and thee alone, and thou dost fill me spiritually. There's another version, and I'm going to type that in here. We'll do this version, but you can work with this other version. Give me a minute. Mudita, are you there? Mudita, are you still there? You were there. I know you've worked with this practice with Wali Ali. Is this how he gave it to you?
Ya Allah, in love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee and to thee alone, and thou dost raise me spiritually.
Raise me spiritually. And I think that's what I've also heard. Raise me or lift me. I've also heard lift. So I'm going to put that here. I think
it was also something that Murshid Sam gave out a lot.
Right.
And,
and I think that, again, it's originally from a hadith of Muhammad's, and it's been modified into English. So take these words, whatever vibration works with you, you use it. So let me just type this also, this other version. You can copy and paste this from the chat, but I'll put the various versions in the study guide, okay? So we're going to do this. Can people see the chat? Can you nod for me? Okay. All righty. So we're going to do this. We're going to raise our hands up. Ya Allah, hands come to the heart. In love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee and thee alone, and thou dost fill me spiritually, rising back up. Okay? Now, if you want to do it, you could do it sitting in a meditative pose and going down. Or the point is you can visualize doing this movement. The whole point is this idea of surrendering. So, Ya Allah, in love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee and to thee alone. And thou dost lift me spiritually. And we can say, fill me spiritually or raise me spiritually. Change the words and see how that feels for you. Okay. So again, Ya Allah, if we were doing this, we would do Ya Allah. And if you were kneeling, you'd go all the way down and touch your head. In love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee and to thee alone, and thou dost lift me spiritually. Can you feel it? Yeah. Good. Let's do it a few more times. Ya Allah, in love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee and to thee alone, and thou dost lift me spiritually. We could also say, fills me spiritually. Ya Allah, in love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee and thee alone, and thou dost fill me spiritually. Let's do it a couple more times. Ya Allah, in love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee and to thee alone, and thou dost lift me spiritually. Ya Allah, in love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee and to thee alone, and thou dost fill me spiritually. Ya Allah, in love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee and to thee alone, and thou dost raise me spiritually. So when things get tough, Murshida Vera always said to me, when things get tough, the tough get going. She was nobody's fool, and she was a tough lady. So when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Remember that. And also, use this practice. Amina, if you feel so inspired to do so, dear Murshida Amina, and maybe translate it into Italian for your Murids, and maybe you could work with this practice as well. I think it would be very good for us to have a worldwide circle of this practice, especially at this time. So much devastation. We must pray for those poor souls in Turkey and Syria that are under rubble and without homes. I mean, it's completely devastating. The Ukraine, I mean, everywhere we look, the ocean, you know, there's something going on. So we pray that, I don't know if, Catherine's still with us, but you know, the whole, or was it Catherine or Kathleen? She joined us new, you know, things that are going on around her. She was talking about before class, pray for those animals, pray for the people. Rashid Hidayat had often said, and he understood this because he experienced a lot of challenges with people along his Sufi path and his Sufi teaching path. And he often again quote Jesus, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. Anyway, I'm moving on and I'm looking at my time. Yeah, we still have time. So I was thinking of this quote about this idea of surrender, sacrifice, and this quote of Rumi popped up, and it's actually a quote that Murshid quotes, quoting Rumi. And this quote is, Murshid says, there's a saying of Jalaluddin Rumi, fire, water, air, earth are the servants of God. Well, we are made of all those things, right? And whenever God wishes them to work for him, her, it, they're ready to obey his command. And you know, my first initiator and guide, Murshid Avira, she understood this. She thought, she always said the elements are alive. They're beings. You know, she would talk to them. She would have us talk to them and do a lot of practices with them. So, excuse me. And Murshid says, if the element, again, quoting Rumi, if the elements are obedient servants of God, cannot we be greater and a better instrument? I mean, we are those elements. So yes, of course we can, but we have to invoke the elements. We need to understand they're working in our being. So I thought, and I hope, I pray we have time. I've put these, the practices will both be in the study guide. I wanted to first work with the purification breaths of Anayat Khan. These breath practices are always in the same cycle. Murshid gave different concentrations. One concentration are with these words, I inhale divine light and life, and breathing out, I radiate divine life and light. The two words switch. First, it's more subtle, light. Light and life, and then it turns and it's life and light. So it's both of those. There are four main breaths that focus, the breaths relate to earth, water, fire, air. Murshid also, to some of his students, gave ether. I'm going to give that to you to work with as well. Now, so those are called the purification breaths. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. He also gave that same cycle with the elements, the concentration on the elements. Those are working with colors and focusing on different points, which I will point to as we work through them. It's the second breath. And I'll explain more about that. So let's just focus on the first one. But there is a third breath in the same cycle that he gave, mostly for Shafayat and Kafayats, which are meaning these are the people that work with healing. I know, Amina, you're doing the healing circle where you live there in Italy. And so that can be done the same cycle with the Wazifa or Wazaif of Ya Shafi, Ya Kafi. God is the remedy. God is all sufficient. So those are, people often get confused. And I recently even had someone from another Sufi organization write me for clarification. I was very happy to help that person. And they were very grateful because they were asking people within their own organization about those distinctions. And it can be confusing, especially if we've been taught by our teachers a certain way, and then someone introduces something else, we think, wait, what's that? So I don't want to confuse anyone, but Murshid himself, you know, and I can provide the documentation in the teaching that he gave for the various levels, 9, 10, 11, and 12 Sufi initiations that were our teachers, that he gave guidance to them. And those are clearly outlined there, those different practices. So let's begin first with the purification breaths. And I want to talk about this. These are Murshid's words and instructions. He says, if possible, do the practices standing in sunshine, and think of inhaling divine life and light and light, light and life and life and light, because he gives that practice very specifically. He says, in explaining the 20 breaths of purification, observe the following. The breath must be rhythmic. So put it in a swing where it's kind of equal. Notice your breath. You want it to be full and rhythmic. Number two, so first is rhythmic. Number two, the rhythm of the breath must not be too much different from the natural rhythm, but he says, make it slower. So I think I have the tendency to breathe a little faster because I run that way, I run a little fast. Some people might be a little slower. It's good to work with also seeing what happens if you purposefully change the rhythm of the breath. See how that changes the physiology and the psychology, because it does. I mean, Sufis are masters of the breath, okay? And hopefully we will all become that. And then he says is the thought must be repeated with each inhalation and exhalation. Inhaling, I inhale divine light and life, and exhaling, I radiate divine life and light, okay? He says, tell the person that from the air, one draws the essence of light and life. And he says, it's not used in the words, but he says, and love. And then we radiate it again. If anyone's worked with this Buddhist practice, Tonglen, of receiving and giving, it's that practice. And we know in some of the very esoteric teachings, which are not available to everyone, that Murshid, well, he tells us himself in his own autobiography, that he traveled the Himalayas and he met with yogis and lamas, and he drew upon those practices. Years ago, I was studying with Davy Tide, who's the head of the healing concentration for the then Sufi order, now the Inayatiya order. And she gave us a symbol to concentrate on. And she said, Murshid talked about visualizing this symbol in blue and see this symbol as marching towards the person that you're concentrating on and healing and touching them and coming back to you. Well, I was talking to her probably within the last few months, she called. And I said, you remember that practice? I said, did you know? I said, I don't remember if I told you then, but do you know that that practice is the Tibetan letter, hum? Sometimes people say hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. It's in Tibetan, it's Om Mani Padme Hum. And there's a special symbol for that. And it's the symbol Murshid gave to concentrate on. So you see, I mean, not everyone would know that, but I've studied, I've written Tibetan, and I've studied also the esoteric language with my beautiful teacher, Komtol Rinpoche, which, by the way, has been reincarnated. It's unbelievable. And so much a blessing that he's come again. He's now a little baby, but he looks like himself. He acts like himself. It's so wonderful he's come again. Anyway, beside the point. So he says, now we've probably broken all of us have broken this, but the breath should be practiced early in the morning, the first thing before breakfast. So think about that as you take this as a practice, if you wish, and I hope you will. And he says, why early in the morning? And he says, because we can draw from the space, capital S, more than at any other time. It's maybe a more subtle time for us. The space has more to give before sunrise than after. And because then the sun occupies the space. So after sunrise, the sun shines so brightly, it occupies our attention on our space. And he says, before the sun has risen, if you can do it before then, the prana in the space is there in an abundance and you can draw it more easily. And, you know, here Joe and I are living at the edge of the continent at Hollywood Beach. And so we often get up in the morning before the sunrise and we watch that celestial dance of the stars. But I'll tell you, as soon as that sun rises, he's like, okay, the rest of you are going to stop shining now because I have arrived. So I get that from what Murshid, you know, and if you are at a place where you see that, you feel that subtlety disappears after the sun comes up. So he says the sages prefer early morning for breathing practices. So we take it as that. Okay. I will repeat the words for you for the first couple breaths of each cycle. The first breath is we breathe in the nose and out the nose. So just start that cycle. And remember, he said it's a natural breath, but it's slightly fuller. We try to take in more air, fill ourselves with space, light, life, and love, drawing those things in. And Murshid says, let's breathe in. I inhale divine light and life, and we breathe out. I radiate divine life and light. In through the nose, I inhale divine light and life. Breathing out through the nose, I radiate divine life and light. And in, and out the nose. If you can't remember the whole phrase, just concentrate on breathing in light and life, and breathing out life and light. The breaths are typically done five at a time, but let's move on now to our next breath, which is breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. As we breathe in through the nose, we repeat the phrase silently, I inhale divine light and life, breathing out through the mouth, I exhale divine life and light. I inhale divine light and life, out through the mouth, I exhale divine life and light. Think of yourself as almost like this solar collector or spiritual collector, where you're drawing all this in from the atmosphere, from space, and you're just letting it radiate back out, really almost without any effort, just flowing on the breath. I inhale through the nose, divine light and life, and out, I radiate divine life and light. The breath changes. We breathe in through the mouth and out through the nose. In through the mouth and out through the nose. We repeat silently to ourselves while breathing in the mouth. I inhale divine light and life. And we breathe out through the nose. I exhale divine life and light. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. The next breath is breathing in through the mouth and out through the mouth. Take a deep breath in. Breathe out. It's like we're sipping the air and also releasing it. Like the lips are like a straw, like we're sipping the air very finely. We're releasing again, very. This is the first step to understanding how to project the breath for the benefit of others. Breathe in through the mouth and out through the nose. Nope, I'm sorry, in through the mouth, out through the mouth while concentrating on the phrase. I inhale divine light and life. And out, I radiate divine life and light. Continue. Now, Murshid goes on to say that there's a fifth breath. But he also was careful not to give everyone in the beginning this breath, because it's so subtle, it can maybe even be a little frightening to people to enter that very subtle state. This is the breath of the ether, and ether is the element from which all things come and through which all things return. So there's a kind of projection and creation, but there's also kind of a dissolution or a death in that process. So when we do this breath, we can kind of practice that process of letting go, being created and letting go. So the fifth breath, it returns to the cycle in the nose and out the nose, but it is so refined that it's like that breath is breathing you instead of you breathing the breath. And Murshid gave these instructions. There's a prayer. It's the healing prayer. It's called the Niyaz, and it is repeated 3 times silently on this very subtle breath. Now, I will say this, but the instructions again will be in the study guide, but allow me to say the words for us. Breathing in, beloved Lord, Almighty God. Breathing out through the rays of the sun. Breathing in through the waves of the air. And breathing out through the all-pervading life in space. Breathing in, purify and revivify me. Hold the breath. And I pray, breathe out, heal my body, heart, and soul. That's number one. Think of it how you're incorporating all the elements in this breath. Beloved in, beloved Lord, Almighty God. Breathe out through the rays of the sun. Breathe in through the waves of the air. Breathe out through the all-pervading life and space. Breathe in, purify and revivify me. Hold your breath, and I pray, breathe out, heal my body, heart, and soul. Last time, in through the nose, subtly, beloved Lord Almighty God, out through the nose, subtly, through the rays of the sun, and in through the waves of the air, and out through the all-pervading life and space. Breathe in, purify and revivify me. Hold, and I pray, out, heal my body, heart, and soul. Feel your body, feel the emotional body, feel the subtle body, feel your breath. Check your emotions. A beautiful practice. It looks like maybe someone had raised their hand and lowered their hand. Are there any questions before I move on? Yes, Sophia, you have to unmute.
I had done this by accident. Sorry. No need.
It's okay, sweetheart. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm going to click here. Maybe I can lower the hand. There we go. All right. I think I want to move on. Would you like to do the elemental breath together too? Is it okay? If you need to leave, it's also okay. But I want you to experience the cycles, but how you use the breath differently to activate or illuminate different aspects. And it's Catherine. Was it Gemma, help me. Was it Catherine that we, Kathleen?
I'm here. Catherine, I'm here.
Catherine. Good. Okay. Pay attention. Click. And I don't know how you found us, but if you're on our e-list, great. If you're not and you want to be, maybe you put it in the chat window, because we send out a link to the audio, the video, but also the study guide. So you'll be able to access that. Okay. So just remember that, or go to our website and email me through that. So now this is a different facet of using this breath. And these are the elemental breaths that correspond to different directions, different colors, and different attributes. And I'm going to read from Murshid's words just a little bit before we do the practice, a few sentences. He says, the mechanism of the body is dependent in its work upon five different aspects of breath. And these aspects are the five different directions of the breath. Now, earlier I was talking about if someone has, if you're in a situation where someone's angry with us, for example, instead of reacting to their fire, we can use the antidote. And the antidote would be, we know this, like we have a fire in the kitchen, what do? We throw flour or towel over it or something to smother the fire. So earth element, sometimes people think water doesn't always do it, but something to kind of ground the fire is very helpful. So one could go to the earth breath. Gemma's very good at this. I've seen her do it. She's very masterful in the earth breath. She's very grounding. She has a very steady breath. When things happen, what I've seen her do time and time again is she'll take a deep breath and then she goes into that breath, and she's very steady in that way. Oh, I've learned a lot from her just because my natural breath is very different. So we can learn from each other by observing others' breath in different situations. So when one aspect of these five elements is not working properly, it brings disorder. So by doing the practice, even the previous practice, which helps balance those elements, we can help ourselves find balance. And that's why, again, it's good to do it in the beginning of the day. And some people do them in the evening. I also do, because sometimes it helps clear away what's happened for the day, kind of reset before sleeping. He says, Murshid says, in eating and drinking and yawning and stretching, and in all the actions of everyday life, these five aspects of breath have to take the lead. And by studying them, we can help ourselves to become like a medicine for us. So the first breath, again, is in through the nose and out through the nose. Same cycle. Now listen to these instructions. Don't get caught in the complexity. In time, it will become very natural. The instructions are to concentrate at the tip of the nose. If it helps, you might even, you see those people in meditation or ecstasy, they're cross-eyed. It's because in a state of samadhi, sometimes the eyes do that, So, and I'm kind of naturally cross-eyed. I don't know if that's just being cockeyed or, but anyway, so here you concentrate here. But you can also sort of look there. It'll cross your eyes a little bit, but it focuses everything. You're going to also visualize, imagine a yellow orb, a golden orb there, like the gemstone, a topaz, in light. Now, what's happening? First of all, what's happening is the spinal fluid, when we do that, is pulling up from the base of the spine and setting here at the base of the head, okay? And when you think about it, the tip of the nose, where is it going to? It's going here. So we're activating all the way through to bring the energy up, okay? I'm going to talk through the instructions and then we're going to do it. The next concentration will be water. We're going to visualize here at the bridge of the nose. If you look at the brain, like the map of the brain, we have things that get stimulated. The pineal gland, the hypothalamus gland, the parasympathetic system, et cetera, et cetera. So these practices are like, bing, triggering those things for us, okay? So when you breathe here, you go here. Oh, my hair doesn't look so nice there. Okay, there it looks better. So you're triggering right here. And I'll tell you the color. The color is green. The element is water. Then we go to the bridge of the nose. No, that's not right. We're going here. Bridge of the nose is water. The color is green, like an emerald. I will talk about a direction also. That's not so important, but you want to concentrate here. And again, you can kind of cross your eyes a little bit if it helps. If not, just imagine, focus on that, feel that part. So that's water. The next one is fire. It's here at the center of the head, the center of the forehead. There you're going to concentrate on red, like a ruby red light. When Mirsha Tadayat gave us this practice, he talked about flames dancing, but red flames, not white and not blue, like flames or embers dancing in color. And the breath will be in through the mouth and out through the nose. So again, look what's happening. It's activating a different part of the brain. Then there'll be one more breath, which is air. We're concentrating here at the crown of the head. Now we're bringing that fluid all the way up and through. Here, you can almost think like a little headlight there. The color will be blue, that's air. Then after that, Mirsha Tadayat, when he gave us the instructions, talked about an arm's length above our head. We see this, maybe, I think when he gave it a couple of times, he spoke specifically of like a diamond getting struck by light and rays of light coming out of that diamond, but like a prism. So you see all the colors. So all the elementals are going into white light, but they're also emerging out of the white light. Okay. And that's ether. It's a fantastic practice. And I'm not saying you have to do them both every day, but go back and forth, see what you experience. Okay. And again, all the instructions will be in this study guide. Okay. Some of you know them. You don't need it, but it's good to look at it again and refresh ourselves. Let me take a little sip of water. We start breathing in the nose and out the nose, and we concentrate at the tip of the nose. They're seeing light, visualizing, imagining. We maybe don't see it, but we imagine the color of beautiful golden light, yellowish in color. And all we do is concentrate on that. And again, you might even hood your eyes a little bit so they're slightly open, if that helps, and then actually look at the tip of the nose. And we breathe in through the nose and out through the nose. Earth has this ability to spread, like the horizontal plane of the earth. It's very stable. So if you need stability, you need grounding, you need to counteract fire or even too much air, this is the breath. Breathe in through the nose and out through the nose, concentrating. If you concentrate, you're going to feel something tingling in your head. The tip of the nose, breathe in the nose and out the nose. Color, golden light, like a topaz, golden yellow. Five breaths. The next breath is the water breath. The water breath is one that deals with our emotions. So if we're over emotional, we may need to master this breath a little bit more. It also, if we get in earth too much, it can create a kind of depression. We can get very stuck. We may need a little water to start the flow happening in our lives. So we would embrace the water breath. The water breath is concentrated on by focusing on the bridge of the nose. You know, you can even touch there if you need to feel it. And there we're going to see the color green, like an emerald. And you know, if you have a white bathtub and you fill it with water, you can tell it's green. Everyone wants to think it's blue, but that's reflecting the sky. So it's green. In a riverbed, you see that it's green. It's like the color in this instance for this visualization, an emerald, beautiful, beautiful, bright green there at the bridge of the nose. And we breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. The motion is descending, descending. So it also can have a grounding influence. In through the nose and out through the mouth. Think about it. When someone's in shock, what do? First of all, they get them to lie down. Second of all, they give them something to drink. So these elements are very healing at the physical level. We bathe. We purify in water. If someone has a bee sting or even a boil, you use mud from the earth. So use these elements as your medicine, both externally and internally, in through the nose and out through the mouth, concentrating on the bridge. Again, you can cross your eyes a little bit to see there and visualize that beautiful green in through the nose and out through the mouth. The third breath is fire. Now we concentrate here on the forehead. It's like the third eye area. The color is red, like a ruby. Brilliant, sparkling, bright red. The element is fire. Now again, fire is that thing that rises. So if we need our energy to be risen, or we need to be warmed in the cold, this is the breath. We need something in our mind or our emotions to be illuminated. Use the breath to activate that. Think of it. We always see incense burning. We always see water used for baptism, christening, etc. We see candles burning, sanctuary lights. Christmas, everything's illuminated. Hanukkah, the lights of Hanukkah on the menorah. So all these elements are spiritual elements. We invoke them. Now again, concentrating, if you need to lightly touch your forehead to bring mindfulness. The breath is in through the mouth and out through the nose, rising like a flame or like a fire, lifting us up. In through the mouth, and out through the nose, it's rising breath. Again, if you can look kind of internally at that part of your skull, you might put your eyes upward, focus there. It helps to draw the energy. You'll feel it in your skull, in your brain. You'll feel something happening in through the mouth and out through the nose. The fourth breath, concentrating at the crown, seeing a blue, beautiful blue light, like a sapphire there, or could be aquamarine color for you, but it's like this blue, clear light. You can even think of your Crayola packet, blue. Here on the crown of the head, if you could look, put your eyes up there, again, drawing the energy up. The breath is air. The line is zigzag, okay? If you need to get out of someone's way, this is a good breath to get into, so you can zig and zag. It's also the realm of creativity and artistic expression. So this is when you're trying to be creative, when you're trying to get out of the analytical side of your being, this is a good breath to go through. It's expansive. We think of air, drawing ideas out of air. You know, we have expressions for it. All right, so we concentrate there. We breathe in through the mouth and out through the mouth, color blue. Again, if you can make your eyes go up like you're looking at the inside of your head, you breathe in through the mouth and out through the mouth. And the last breath is the ether breath. And again, as Murshid Hinayat Khan described it, the son of Hazrat Hinayat Khan, he said, imagine, and we had, many of us had the good fortune of meeting him in his lifetime. He described it as like a diamond, but like an etheric diamond. It's not necessarily solid. And light coming from far above it, from the celestial heavenly realms, descending, striking that diamond, and sparks of all the different colors radiate. He even described it as allowing that light to touch our etheric subtle body and fill it. And this is that very subtle breath again. Again, if you can make your eyes think, imagine they're up there, make them go up high. It will give a lifting feeling. And then we breathe in through the nose and out through the nose, very subtly, contacting this subtle element and this subtle light, bringing it through and over our being. Amen. I appreciate all of you staying with me through these practices and your patience in going over a little bit of time today, but I think it's so worth it to to see these two practices together and how they can invoke certain subtleties. So I thought in closing, we'll say the Ketum, but I also do my public service announcement. Some of you have been so gracious and generous, but we do have a donate button and it will be in the study guide. You know, I've had some expenses come up as anyone that's running classes know you do, but with our Zoom accounts and our web accounts, those things that keep us connected and keep the teachings flowing out to the world. So every little bit counts, nothing's too small. And I wanted to dedicate the merit in a very traditional way. Mersha does it as the Ketum, we might say, and I'll speak a moment about that before we say that prayer, but I wanted to give a more traditional dedication of merit, especially to all those souls that are leaving the earth for whatever reason now, be it war, be it the earthquake, be it famine, be it disease, be it old age, sickness. And we dedicate this practice by the power and the truth of this practice. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all be free from sorrow and the causes and the conditions of sorrow. May they never be separated from the sacred happiness, which is sorrowless. And may all live in equanimity without too much attachment and without too much aversion. And live believing in the equality of all beings and all that lives. Now, Mershad says about the Ketum that each line is a metaphysical reality. So taking this prayer and concentrating on the different lines of it, just as yourself, pick one and say it again and again throughout the day. Let it be your touchstone. See what happens. But we'll say it together now. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide men. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being. Oh.